Aloha. You are listening to Chad Ford's NBA Big Board on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your next order. My guest today is The Athletic's John Hollinger, back with us to do some interesting NBA draft trade talk, trade scenarios today. Always one of the fun parts of the NBA draft. Welcome aboard, John.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show, as always.
John, before we begin, I just want to give a shout out to one of our longtime editors, Royce Webb from ESPN.com. He was part of the ESPN layoffs that happened the other day. And Royce was my longtime editor really from the beginning. And one of the unsung heroes at ESPN. I was a bit of a sloppy writer, to be honest. And it often took a lot of massaging to get my work up to speed. But it wasn't just that. He was a thought partner for me on so many of the things that you saw on ESPN.com, including the lottery mock draft generator, the draft tiers column that ran every year, how we did big boards and mock drafts and everything else. And he was a huge part of my success at ESPN. And I just want to give him a shout out and wish him well and his family. And for anybody listening that needs an incredible NBA editor, Royce Webb's available.
And you should definitely hire him. Royce was the guy who brought me into ESPN, actually. He kind of that whole dream team we had in the mid decade in the 2005 to 2010 or whatever. I mean, that was him that put that all together. So yeah, it's a tough day around here.
Yeah. And you know, it's again, one of those secrets, the people that are the readers never really get to see all the work that goes into what you read. And even, you know, that column that we used to do together, the future power rankings, that was also a Royce Webb idea, if you remember. Yeah, and John and I used to work on that together for years. Just super knowledgeable and an amazing human being and to work with as well. And so we wish him well. It's always hard to be laid off, but know that he's going to land on his feet. Let's dive into the trade scenarios for this draft, because I think the thing that we all know is that Minnesota, one, has been talking to everybody about a trade. We know Golden State is open to trading this pick. And then as you sort of move through the draft, because in part there's no consensus number one in this draft, it seems like there's a number of teams that are willing to move on, sometimes because where they are at in their progression and development as a team means that they're much more gunning for the playoffs than they are rebuilding at the moment. And that just seems to be the case with a number of these teams at the top. And there's a couple of teams that I think are actually trying to move up in this draft, and so we'll talk about them. So what John and I are going to do today is, you know, whether it's based on intel that John has or I have, or just sometimes our own imagination of what we think would be a good move for teams, we're just going to kind of move through what we think might be a plausible scenario or two for some of the teams at the top of the draft. And so I'm going to tee it off by asking you, John, let's start with Minnesota. First of all, what do you think the odds are that they deal the number one pick before draft night? Because it's extremely rare that the number one pick is actually dealt. The last time it happened was with Boston and trading 1 for 3 and with Philadelphia.
Yeah, so my default is that it won't happen for that exact reason. But I'm hearing enough chatter about Minnesota trades that it's definitely a scenario that's on the table. And I think from the T-Wolves perspective, they don't necessarily love the idea of pairing LaMelo Ball with D'Angelo Russell. And I think they want to see what other value is out there that they can extract. And if they can put something around Towns and Russell that's a little more winning ready, I think they wouldn't be opposed to that.
And I think it's interesting, too, because, you know, you talk about LaMelo Ball not being a great fit there. But James Wiseman isn't a great fit there, you know, with Karl Anthony Towns either. I'm not even sure that Anthony Edwards is necessarily a great fit. When you think about their development curve and how much I think there is going to be a learning curve for Anthony Edwards in the NBA. And you're also talking about two players in Karl-Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell who are going to take a huge amount of shots for their team. And the one thing that Anthony Edwards really, I think, brings to the table is that he's going to be a high-volume scorer. And so it's not like any of these players, in my opinion, at the top are particularly great fits for Minnesota. It's not just LaMelo Ball. I really don't love any of them. If I was to pick a player in this draft that I actually think might be a nice fit for them, it might be like Obi Toppin or maybe Tyrese Halliburton or something like that. But it's unlikely that they're going to go one.
Yeah, exactly. And you wouldn't. I mean, if that's the guy you who's on top of your board, you can extract a lot of value by not taking them one and have them on a better contract, actually, if you trade down first.
Except maybe you can't in this draft because it doesn't seem like any team also wants the number one pick in this draft. This is the problem when you don't have a consensus number one, is who sticks their neck out.
Seems to be a lot more interest in trading down than trading up, certainly.
Yeah. And so I think that's the other problem that Minnesota has. Theoretically, the number one pick has a lot of value, a lot of trade value, probably too much trade value for a team to actually move up and get it. This year, I'm just not sure, other than the Knicks, who has the motivation to give up a bunch of assets to get the number one pick in the draft. And the problem for the Knicks is that I'm not really sure they have the assets to get there anyway. And so that's part of the challenge there. And so, you know, we can pass on Minnesota if we want to pass. But do you see a deal out there that you think makes sense for Minnesota?
Yeah, the one deal that I think might be possible is if you trade number one and James Johnson to Charlotte for number three and Miles Bridges. Charlotte has enough cap room to take in the salary differential. And then Charlotte would be doing that if they are worried about James Wiseman going two. And if Wiseman's their guy, then they ensure they get him at one. Minnesota goes down to three and knows they're getting either Ball or Edwards, or can trade again out of three if they so wish. So that's one that I see could have some possibilities to it. But again, it would have to be contingent on Charlotte wanting Wiseman so badly and being so worried about Golden State taking him at two that they're willing to leapfrog the Warriors.
And that's interesting. We know that getting a big is a major need for the Hornets, and there is a lot of talk, as you said, about the Warriors potentially taking Wiseman at two, and so that makes sense. And for the Wolves at three, if you decide okay, Obi Toppin or Tyrese Halliburton instead, because they're a better fit, it's a lot more palatable to take one of those guys at three and maybe let a LaMelo Ball slip, for example, than it will be at one.
Yeah, yeah. Or you could even trade down again to four or five if you thought Chicago or Cleveland was so hot to try for one of those guys. So you have some ways to play your hand even from three.
Or maybe you move all the way down to eight, and this is how the Knicks get up. Into the top three.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I think both John and I are going to put our money on that the Wolves end up staying at number one, selecting this pick. It's going to be a tough choice. I just released my mock draft on Friday and had them taking LaMelo Ball, not again because I think he's the right fit in Minnesota, but, you know, trades don't just happen on draft night. And at some point, you're drafting the player that you think has the most trade value, period.
I think the top two picks could be determined mostly by trade value rather than utility to the actual team that drafts them.
Exactly. Let's go to Golden State, because there's been a ton of scenarios out there about Golden State. I think we sort of knew coming in that this is a team that has aspirations on an NBA championship next year. Their window seems to be, you know, 2 or 3 years with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. Adding a rookie in this draft where it's hard to project an instant impact rookie coming in and making a big difference there. And a lot of talk about Golden State. The best thing is for them to make a deal. I know you floated several deals on The Athletic for the Golden State Warriors, and I think you actually have a favorite.
Yeah, so it's it would be Andrew Wiggins, Kevon Looney, the second pick, and the Minnesota pick that's top four protected next year, going to New Orleans for Jrue Holiday and J.J. Redick.
And talk us through why you think that that is the right deal for the Warriors.
So it's the win now deal to turn Wiggins into Holiday and Redick. And it gets them off of Wiggins's deal, which is important. It gets them. This is one of the few ways that they can get two good players out of their draft pick and their trade exception, which they don't have a lot of other ways to really do it twice. Like, they can take a bad player into the trade exception and then trade the pick and that player and kind of get one good player out of it. But in terms of like guys who will be in their top seven in a playoff game, this is the way to get two guys like that. The downside is you don't get a big out of it. You'd have to sign a free agent that way. But it also, I mean, the other aspect of this is it prevents their salary structure from getting too wildly out of control this year in a season where they're not going to have much revenue, if any at all, from Chase Center, and their luxury tax bill is going to be huge. We know that the luxury tax level isn't going to change. So I think there probably is, even though they're all in on winning this year, there has to be at least maybe a little consideration of that. So you can argue whether two and the Minnesota pick is too much. But on the other hand, they're getting off a horrible contract in Wiggins, even if they don't necessarily see it that way internally. I think receiving teams do. They'll have a good chance at re-signing Holiday. And I think he's a good fit with that team as the third perimeter player around Clay and Steph. Have him as your defensive stopper. So I just like the deal in a lot of ways for them. And then they would basically just need to sign a big in free agency, which shouldn't be that hard. And they're good to go.
Could you imagine lineups that have Clay, Steph, Holiday, and Redick all on the floor at the same time?
Yeah, with Draymond as the only big. Yeah, good luck guarding that.
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario. If anybody can make it work, Steve Kerr can make it make a team like that work. It's a really, again, I think Holiday is a great fit in Golden State. I think that the lack of getting a big is going to be the challenge, obviously, for them. You said you'll sign one in free agency, but, you know, again, how great will they be? What would the Pelicans do at two? In your mind, given what they have right now, who would you draft at two if you were the Pelicans? Because that's the obvious upside for them, is that they're getting the number two pick in the draft. What would you do?
Can you play the ball brothers together?
And a lot of people have speculated that. I'm not sure the answer is yes to that.
I think Edwards could be a better fit there, playing next to Lonzo. And they'd have an opening at the two if both Holiday and Redick are gone. So that could be closer to the answer. You could go, you know, if you were, I'm not super high on Wiseman, but if you were, you could go Wiseman there at two if he was there. Because, I mean, Jackson Hayes, I mean, I know they drafted him in the lottery last year, but I think he's more of a project than a you know, instant help guy. So I think that's another way you could go. But I would say probably Edwards is the best fit there. But, you know, you got on the upside thing. I mean, if you could figure out how to play the ball brothers together, you'd sort of have this built-in advantage of, like, you'd probably know you'd be able to re-sign one or the other kind of ad infinitum as long as you had the other one under contract, you would think. I don't know. Maybe somebody knows more about those dynamics and would disagree with me. But
I like the Edwards pick here, and just that – could you imagine, you know, Zion Williams and Edwards, you know, talk about these physically, not only in the elite explosive athleticism, but in just the sheer strength that they bring to their position. I mean, that's what's so freaky about Edwards, isn't just how explosive he is as an athlete. It's that he's built like a tank, you know, at that position. And then, you know, the more skill finesse players in Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball, you know, on that team, I like that. And I think as a development curve, having Anthony Edwards grow with a young team like that, I think in a lot of ways would be an ideal scenario for him. And boy, would they be fun to watch.
Yeah. I agree. You know, at the pace they want to play too, Lonzo pushing it up, Ingram running, Williamson running, like Edwards fits that.
Yeah, I actually think that that's a serious deal that teams should consider, because there's a win for both teams there. And, you know, you also bring in Wiggins into the mix there, and you're right that his contract isn't great, but he is another asset on that team that could be really really interesting.
He's in the right age pocket, and I think his number isn't going to hurt them if you look at their books going forward, because it's not like, oh, we were going to be a free agent destination, but we had this Wiggins contract, you know? Like, I don't think you worry about that as much if you're in New Orleans. And it'll be his deal will be expired before they have to pay the second pick or pay Zion. So I think it could work out.
We know the Pelicans are shopping Holiday. That's been reported, you know, in multiple places. I'm sure Golden State isn't the only place that he might land. There's going to be a lot of interest in him, I assume. Do you have a backup Warriors deal?
I mean, my sort of default is for him to go to the Nuggets for Gary Harris and some leftovers. And with the Nuggets throwing in multiple first round picks. The problem is, I mean, if you're in New Orleans, you just don't have to do that deal right now, right? Like, you can play everything else out, and then you could almost go to the trade deadline and still do that same deal with the Nuggets. You just don't need to do that right now. So I think it's worth it to them to exhaust every other opportunity, and then later you can come back to the Nuggets and be like, all right.
Okay,
I would say the Nuggets are definitely going to be in this until it ends.
And is there another Warriors deal at moving to that you like, or is that the only plausible one that you really see right now?
I got a couple others that I want to get to when we get to these teams later in the lottery, because okay. I think there's a lot of places Golden State could go.
Okay, we'll save that for a little bit later. We already talked about a Hornets deal. They're at 3. One where they move all the way up to 1 to get James Wiseman. Anything else that you think with the Hornets that makes sense?
I don't see a 3-for-2 deal that makes a lot of sense. If you're trading 3-for-2, you basically know Golden State wasn't going to take the guy you wanted anyway, right? So it's a bluff at that point. So I don't really see the point of that. The only other argument to be made was, if you were indifferent between Wiseman and Onyeka and Kongwu, and you were somehow determined to take a big anyway, could you move yourself down to like 7 or 8 if Detroit or New York wanted to move up and LaMelo Ball was still there at 3?
And I wondered, that's the deal that I had for them, you know, always trying to think about how the Knicks get up. If LaMelo Ball's at 3, the Knicks trade Mitch Robinson and 8 for, you know, 3 and Hernan Gomez, for example. And it gives, first of all, the Warriors a big, or sorry, the Hornets a big in Mitch Robinson. And you know, 2 at 8, they might also be able to get a Kongwu or Obi Toppin or you know, someone else there at 8. And for the Knicks, you know, Mitch Robinson's a high price. I know it's a player that they don't necessarily want to part with. But if it gets them LaMelo Ball and it energizes this fan base that they desperately need to energize, it's not a huge price to pay to move up from 8 to 3 in a draft to get a guy that many people have projected as the number one player in this draft.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm sure Charlotte would happily throw in Kentucky guy Malik Monk for the Knicks contingent too.
So there you go, Knicks fans. You kind of cross your fingers that Minnesota doesn't take LaMelo Ball because he's not a great fit. Golden State, it doesn't really seem like LaMelo Ball's much on the radar screen there at the number 2 pick. So he's there at 3. You have to give up Mitch Robinson to get him. But at the end of the day, if you believe in LaMelo Ball and believe he could be a franchise player, that's not a high price to pay to be able to score him. And so I think that's actually one of the most plausible deals for the Knicks in that scenario. I'm sure we'll have more Knicks talk later. Let's take a break and hear a word from our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll look at more potential NBA Draft 2020 trades when we come back with The Athletic's John Hollander. And we're back talking 2020 NBA draft trades with The Athletic's John Hollinger. We've already talked about the Timberwolves. We've talked about the Warriors. We've talked about the Hornets. Let's talk about the Bulls. They're sitting there at four. They have a new general manager, have a new coach, have a roster that has, you know, a number of young players on it, but not sure any of those young players are necessarily franchise cornerstones that you're going to build around. I think that this front office is going to be open to anything, including just sort of cleaning the slate in Chicago. What do you think their best deal is for the Bulls?
What do you think about this one? Wendell Carter and the fourth pick for Kevon Looney and the second pick.
Interesting.
Golden State gets a big that way, moves down to four. The Bulls move up to two and take either LaMelo Ball or Anthony Edwards.
Interesting. This would certainly be the splash that I think the Bulls are looking for. And it's one of those teams where I know there's a lot of impatience in Chicago in some ways, but Chicago really needs, in my opinion, they have a lot of nice young players, but there's not one that I would look at on that roster and say you're building around that player.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Markkanen, no, he's a nice player. Yeah. Kobe White, no, I'm sorry. Zach LaVine, you're certainly not building around. And so if you see that one of these players, whether it's Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball or whoever it is, you think could be that franchise cornerstone, that's, again, I think, not a big price to pay in Wendell Carter to move up a couple spots in the draft. You like Wendell Carter as a fit in Golden State?
I think he can be. I think he has a lot of passing ability, like high post ability. He was weirdly reticent to shoot last year, and he has to make perimeter shots. But he can play four and five. He has some shot blocking to him. Like, I kind of like him better on a good team. I always felt that way when we were scouting him when he was at Duke. So I think that would be a really interesting deal.
I also think that at four, that frees the Warriors up to take an Okongwu, for example, or to take, Tyrese Halliburton, who could maybe play like a Sean Livingston type role, you know, on that team, Obi Toppin. I mean, there's a way for them to continue to get a young player here. And by the way, Carter's a young player. And just moving down a couple spots in the draft, that certainly seems like a win. I think it totally depends on, do the Bulls see a player here at two that they're confident they can build around? Because that's the challenge in moving up right now. I'm not sure, you know, I'm working on my draft tiers column right now, and my question is, I don't think there's a tier one player. I'm not sure there's a tier one player in this draft, and the question is there a tier two player in this draft?
right, yeah.
And I'm not sure there is. I mean, it may be that this draft tiers column starts at tier three this year.
Well, I mean, and if there is a tier two player in this draft, he might be hiding out in the bushes at the 17th pick. It might be one of those drafts.
Yeah,
right?
It might be 2013 all over again, where Giannis Antetokounmpo and Rudy are there, but they're much later in the draft.
Exactly.
Okay, Cleveland Cavaliers on the weird team, just a weird team with this young backcourt, this veteran frontcourt. They certainly seem like they need to pick a direction that they're going. So you can make arguments. They trade down and add another veteran. They don't need another young player. You could also make arguments about a Kevin Love deal. For example, I'm not sure they're going to be able to move Andre Drummond. What do you think is the right move for Cleveland?
I think there's a roundabout way for them to move into the top three. If Charlotte is interested in moving down from three to five, you trade Larry Nance to Boston for the 14th pick. Boston can assemble enough contracts to be a matching salary for that. And then you trade 5 and 14 to Charlotte for 3. And then that gets you. The problem is when you move into the top three, now you're taking Ball or Edwards, and your last two drafts you took Sexton and Garland. Now, if it was up to me, like if you come in here as a new front office, you say, well, we don't have anything invested in Garland and Sexton, and they weren't that good, so what's the big deal? But it's hard when you're the front office that picked them to go ahead and make that move and sort of recruit over the top of your last two lottery picks. Edwards is probably an easier fit there than Ball would be. But you could argue Ball is big and can move Sexton off the ball, and you could play them that way too. It would be an interesting move for Cleveland, certainly. That's the best I can do on a trade for them. I mean, otherwise you could just say, just trade Nance to Boston for the 14th pick and be happy with that, right?
Yeah, and adding another pick, it's just that they seem in such a strange limbo. You know, even at whether you're adding an Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball, you know, putting them with Kevin Love and Andre Drummond, again, I'm just trying to figure out what direction this team is going. Do you think there's a Kevin Love deal out there?
No, not at all. No, I don't think there's any market for him at all. I had people openly scoff at me last year when I was bringing up Kevin Love trades. Like people in the league were just like, John, no.
So if that's the case, then Cleveland's stuck for a minute. They're going to be stuck with that front court of Andre Drummond and Kevin Love.
Yeah. And Nance, who was actually their best player last year, being like the third guy off the bench. Really, what they needed was the best player available to be a small forward. And it looks like that's not going to happen, right?
It's really fascinating because at five, that's what we're looking at. Like whether it's Denny Avdija or Isaac Okoro or what, you know, whatever at five, we're sort of slotting them there. And it almost makes me wonder whether they're better off just staying at five then and taking that guy that they've long needed than moving up a spot and, like you said, disrupting that backcourt. Though I'm a big believer and, you know, I always point to, you know, Portland in the Chris Paul, Deron Williams draft. Passing on them, moving down to five in part because they had Sebastian Telfair there. You know, there's a point when you look at your talent and say, are the guys that I'm drafting better than the guys that I currently have in the backcourt? And I think in this case, whether you're talking about Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball, the answer is yes.
Chad, where teams screw themselves is when they aren't honest about either where they are as a team or what their actual talent is. And I think that could be a situation here in Cleveland where not being honest with themselves about what they have causes them to potentially pass on another good guard. So we'll see how it works out.
Want to talk now about Atlanta at six. Another interesting team because there seems to be some pressure, some pull for the Hawks to become a playoff team this year. And I think you and I might be in alignment that might be a mistake. That to make an eighth seed in the playoffs and get wiped out in the first round of the playoffs might not be the right developmental move right now for the Hawks. Did they trade down? Did they trade up? Did they trade out? What do you think the Hawks should be doing at six?
I actually think they should keep this pick and make it. If you're planning on becoming good, this is your last shot to have a lottery pick, a high lottery talent, join your young Collins Capella core. Before you're picking a different caliber of player, most likely in the teens and 20s in future drafts, if things go the way you hope. So I actually think they're better off keeping this pick and then using all their free agent money to make a short-term push to be as good as they can be. But especially if they sign short deals, it's almost impossible for them to screw it up in a way that really hurts their team long-term. Whereas if trading the sixth pick, it's really easy to screw that up in a way that hurts your team long-term. So I think they should make this pick. That said, I couldn't help coming up with one if they didn't want to make this pick. What do you think about the sixth pick to Indiana for Victor Oladipo, TJ McConnell, and Goga Batadze? They got the cap room to take in all that money.
I mean, that's interesting. Again, if the goal is that we're trying to take that next step and Oladipo, you know, depending on what you think about him before he got injured in Indiana was having really a career year. I like that deal. I'm probably going to more side with you that they take a player at six and just keep six. But then when I look at who's available for them at six, I wonder how much that moves the needle, whether they take an Isaac Okoro there or, there's so many names that have been attached.
Vassell maybe could be a fit there.
Vassell could be a fit, but again.
Halliburton, if he's still there, he might be gone.
Is he a core guy? Is there any way that you think that what they should do is package one of the young lottery picks that they've taken recently to move up and try to add another player that they think could be a star next to Trae Young? It's a John Collins or someone like that.
The problem to me is that it has to be Collins, because I don't think there's any market for Hunter, and I think there's a pretty limited market for Reddish. So in order to like move up into the top three, you probably have to deal Collins, which, I mean, now you're subtracting from your core in order to bring in something that you don't even know what it is, right? That's a hard one for me. I mean, in some respects, they have to make a decision on John Collins in terms of what he's worth and whether they're willing to pay him. And if they decide that that's not the answer, then they may feel compelled to do something there. But giving him up just to move into the top three in an iffy draft, yeah, I don't know. I don't get excited about that.
Because Collins seems to be a guy that Golden State, for example, would probably have a lot of interest in.
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. Especially, I mean, at his salary number this year, I mean, having him at $4 million this year really helps them, even though it's going to go to like 20-something next year. So, yeah, you could make an argument for that. And then you could make an argument if Collins is out of there, then the Hawks, like, if they did something with Collins without moving six, then you could argue for Obi Toppin being a perfect fit there at six. But again, that only happens if there's a deal that lets them, say, trade Collins for a good wing player or something.
Well, that, you know, this is where I was sort of going with this with Golden State. Like, what if it's just Collins for the number two pick? Right? It's a straight Collins for number two. Obviously, salary filler coming back, you know, to make up the difference. Golden State says, you know, look, we get a player who can play right now. He's still young. He's on a great salary. He fits a need for us. I think he would be a really nice fit in Golden State. And now the Hawks are sitting with the second pick and the sixth pick in the draft. They can replace Collins probably with the sixth pick in the draft and then swing for the fences, whether that's probably, I'm not sure I can see.
It has to be Edwards at two.
Yeah, at Edwards at two.
It has to be Edwards at two. And I mean, he's, you know, the Georgia connection there, obviously. So that would be interesting.
So is Edwards over Collins? I mean, that's, you know, the sort of question.
Yeah. So you would just be all offense with Trae Young, Anthony Edwards, and Obi Toppin, right? As your as three of your starters.
And so poor Clint Capella.
145, 143. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that is the issue, because I think as you look at the Hawks, what you're thinking they need is defense, right? Which is why Devin Vassell is someone who comes up as a potential pick there at six. But that is fascinating to me. And certainly one, if I was the Warriors, that might excite me about how I'm gonna play the number two pick in the draft, and wonder, knowing what we know about Collins now in this draft, where would Collins go in this draft? And he might be a top three pick in this draft.
I think certainly you could make a strong argument he'd go fourth, right?
Right.
If he didn't go in the top three. So yeah, absolutely.
And he just has the added advantage that he's ready to come in and play right now. But he's not so old that you're not completely sacrificing your future in Golden State, and you're taking a risk with anybody that you take it to. All right, I'm now almost going to shift off. Maybe that's the deal the Warriors should do instead of the Holiday Redick at two. Detroit Pistons, another team. What are they doing? Does anybody know what Detroit's doing right now? I mean, I'm not asking what they're doing on draft night. What is this team doing?
I think they finally realized, like last year, they realized it's not happened with Blake Griffin and we actually have to rebuild. They brought in Troy Weaver now. I think they're going to be patient now. I think they're going to try to re-sign Christian Wood and not do a whole lot else. The one thing I wonder about with them, could they go from 7 to 2 and get LaMelo Ball, who's been working out in Michigan? If they were willing to do like Tony Snell for Andrew Wiggins, they have enough room to take in Wiggins. And his salary is not probably going to hurt them in the out years that much, again, because they're not going to be like a cap room team. And they don't have a bunch of guys coming up for max contracts because they don't have anyone worth paying that much money. So is that a deal that makes sense for them to go from 7 to 2, get LaMelo Ball, or Yeah, basically, yeah, go from 7-2, get LaMelo Ball. There's also like some little, like you hear Luke Kennard stuff out there all the time because he's coming up for an extension, but I don't think that's anything that involves lottery picks. That's like, you know, when Boston's picks at 26 and 30 and stuff like that, right? That's where you're talking about Luke Kennard stuff. So the main one for me, I think, is can they get in position to get LaMelo Ball? And they don't have a ton asset-wise to really put themselves in position, but their willingness to take a contract back could give them a leg up if they were willing to take Wiggins back.
It's interesting of the deals that we've talked about Golden State. It the only thing that really nets Golden State is that they get Wiggins' contract off their books.
Yeah, I don't think they hate the Wiggins contract enough to do that right now.
And it seems like the Holiday deal that you talked about would certainly be a better route for them if they're going to unload Wiggins' deal there to move to 2-7. Though certainly at 7 we could start talking about again whether that's an Obi Toppin or Onyeka Okongwu or someone like a Tyrese Haliburton or maybe even a Killian Hayes that might be able to come in and help Golden State. That's a pretty big sacrifice for them when they're in win now championship mode, that basically what they did is got out of a bad contract. Any chance Pistons can move Blake Griffin?
No, I don't see any chance. I think if he's proves himself to be ambulatory for half the season, then I think they have a chance of moving him at the trade deadline. But to move him right now, I mean, I just don't see what deal is out there. His number is so big, and what are they even getting out of moving him? Like they're $30 million under the cap now. They're gonna have a hard time spending that. So what do you even get out of moving off of that number? And you're gonna have to pay somebody to take it. So I don't really see the win in Blake Griffin deals for Detroit right now.
It's interesting because I think Detroit is actually one of the few teams along with the Knicks that have been somewhat vocal that they'd like to move up in this draft, that they're definitely trying to rebuild and add young talent here. Again, it's just whether they have the assets to do it. And, you know, other than that they can move guys into cap space, I'm not sure that they really have it there. So that might be a really tough play for Detroit this year.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I'm with John Hollinger of The Athletic. We're talking NBA draft trades, and we're going to listen to a few of our sponsors, and we'll be back to talk about the New York Knicks. And we are back. I'm with John Hollinger of The Athletic talking 2020 NBA draft trades. We've already talked about one potential Knicks deal with the Hornets, where they would essentially swap 3 and 8 and swap Mitch Robinson for someone, Willie Hernan Gomez, Malik Monk, something like that. And that gives the Knicks a chance to get LaMelo Ball. Any other Knicks deals you see out there that intrigue you, John?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same deal with Golden State, right? I mean, we talked about with Charlotte, but you'd trade 8 and Robinson for 2, right? And try to get to 2 with Golden State. Their other way to move up is to they have 8, 27, and 2 future firsts from Dallas. So could they package those together and move up into the top 3? I just don't know if those other picks have enough value to justify a move from 2 to 8. They do have cap room where they could take in some deals, which makes things a little interesting. But again, the types of deals you're looking at are probably like short-term fixes for a team that shouldn't be making short-term fixes. That not that it's ever stopped them before, but like, you know, so like, are you going to trade 8 to Oklahoma City for 25? So you can bring in Chris Paul and overpay him for 2 years and then have to rebuild the team again 2 years from now. I don't see how that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the Knicks, unfortunately for Knicks fans, are going to have to be patient here. Chris Paul is not going to turn around the franchise. Russell Westbrook, someone that they had some interest in before they spent all their free agent money on 5 power forwards last summer when they maybe could have had him. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Let's talk about LaMelo Ball and the Knicks, because this has been talked about really since the start of the season. LaMelo Ball, Knicks. Do you actually even like this fit of LaMelo Ball with the Knicks. I mean, he is number one on your board, and he's number one on my board. Was this the right move? Should the Knicks be pursuing LaMelo Ball?
I think they should pursue it, sure. I mean, what do they have that they're building around right now? Like, RJ Barrett wasn't any good last year. I don't see what the problem is in trying to build around him. I mean, you're trying to, at this point, if you're the Knicks, you're trying to fit the team around the talent you bring in, not fit the talent you bring in around this bad team that you already have. So I don't see the problem with that. Yeah, he's the top talent in the draft. Try to get him.
What would you be willing to give up? Let's say that a team at one or two or three says Mitch Robinson isn't enough, right? I want more than Mitch Robinson. Do you give up RJ? Is LaMelo Ball worth it?
That's interesting. I would struggle to do both Robinson and RJ. I mean, I'm down on RJ, but still, like, we've seen what he could do at previous levels. So I'd be, and LaMelo Ball is not a sure thing. So I would hesitate there probably.
Would you give up RJ instead of Mitch Robinson?
I probably would. Yeah. I would give up RJ to go from 8 to 2. Yeah. I probably would do that.
Any other player that you see on the Knicks roster right now that you could say, you know, people talk about Kevin Knox, for example, but I think his trade value is so low, I'm not sure that he's particularly an asset.
You can't trade a CAA guy who went to Kentucky, Chad. Come on. They're going to ask for 3 firsts at least for him.
If for whatever reason, it just doesn't seem like it's enough for Golden State or Charlotte to take back Mitch Robinson or to take back RJ, is there anybody else that you look on the Knicks roster right now that could sweeten this deal enough to make it happen? Because that's the thing that I'm just, you know, scratching my head about right now.
They're not doing it with player contracts. They're doing it with picks. They're doing it with pick 27, the 2 future Dallas picks, or you got to hope that you're not going to put a future Knicks pick in there because they've paid for this before, but teams will ask for the Knicks' own future first, I'm sure, because they know they have a chance to do really well on those, right? So that to me is the asset they have is draft picks. Their own player contracts are not really worth much aside from Robinson and Barrett.
But you don't think in any scenario the Knicks should include a future first
Own. I mean, the Dallas picks.
Yeah, those are going to be picks in the mid to late 20s.
They're going to be in the 20s. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I'm just trying to gauge Ball's value in your mind right now, like, right? Because there is a point where the Knicks could probably conceivably do a deal, whether it's with Golden State, Minnesota, or whatever, to get him. But at what cost is always the question, right? And so in your mind, it's not both Mitch Robinson and RJ. That's too much. And in your mind, it could be one of them individually, but if they have to include their own draft pick, a future of their own draft pick in it, then that also is too high of a cost for LaMelo. Okay. Knicks fans, you're going to be like the country watching the election, like half the country holding your breath on draft night. Like, is there a way to get LaMelo Ball? I mean, there's never been a better draft to actually move up than there is right now. And so I think the chances are real for New York with Charlotte, Minnesota, or Golden State to get LaMelo Ball. And there's scenarios where LaMelo Ball falls to 4 or 5 as well. And, you know, maybe they move up with Chicago or Cleveland. Just what would you put the odds that by November 19th, LaMelo Ball is a New York Knick? What are the odds are you putting on it right now, John?
I'm going to say 10 to 15%.
Okay. That's it's not great numbers, but as we've learned in the election, it's something.
It's better than, so you're saying there's a chance. Like, it's better than that, but not like a whole lot better.
All right, John Hollinger with a nice Dumb and Dumber reference there as well. Even changed his voice for that. That's great. All right, we're all the way now at 9, the Washington Wizards. You know, another team that a lot of pressure on what they're going to do with Bradley Beal. They say they're going to keep him. Lots of teams would like him. Obviously, the whole direction of the franchise really swings around, you know, whether they're keeping Beal or trading Beal. What do you think they should be doing on draft night?
So here's what I think they're going to end up holding on to Beal, at least to the trade deadline and maybe till next offseason. Washington is the one team I don't really see a deal for. I think they're just sitting there praying that Onyeka Okongwu gets to them. I think that's absolutely their best case scenario. They need a defensive big. He'd be perfect there. So I think that's the one they're really hoping for. I don't see a lot of real trade scenarios for them. I could see a way maybe, you know, if they don't like what's there at 9, do you trade with Boston and move down to take 14, 26, and 30 and give yourself more chances at it? Maybe. But that's like the most encouraged I can get about a Washington trade.
You don't see any way that they could move up a couple of spots in the draft, like 6, let's say, 5 to get a Okongwu, and they're throwing in 9 and then they throw in Hachimura or something like that. Because yeah, I agree. If you like take a player in this draft and then look at a team and say, okay, that team needs this guy, Okongwu is such a no-brainer fit for Washington. And he's probably not going in the top 5, probably not. And so they probably at like, you know, 6 or something like that might be able to get him. Do they have enough to move up 3 spots in the draft?
I don't think Hachimura has people excited. I don't think if somebody wants to make a pick at 6, I don't think they're going to, oh, you're giving me Hachimura? Never mind. Like, nobody's doing that. So I don't think they have enough without including one of their own firsts, which I think they would be foolish to do and would not do. So I think they're sort of marooned at 9 in a lot of ways.
Wait, Gary Payton II isn't going to do it?
No, I mean, neither will Anziz Pasechniks. Troy Brown and Isak Bonga probably are the young guys they have that have the most trade value to me, but still just like because they're not in that tier of player really where teams see them as like long-term starters, they're like not moving off a lottery pick in a deal with those guys.
Okay. Sorry, John Hollinger just crushed Wizards fans everywhere. Well, let's do one more team. Phoenix Suns.
Yeah. Kelly Oubre, Ricky Rubio, and the 10th pick to Oklahoma City for the 25th pick and Chris Paul.
All right. You are sensing the Robert Sarver itchiness that he always has, right? That
this is, yes.
This is the team. This is the year.
This is right down Sarver Street. All in for the 7th seed. Yeah.
All in for a team that, if you add Chris Paul to the mix, is probably exactly what you just said. Like a 7th seed out in, you know, 3 to 4 games in the first round of the playoffs. Yeah.
The thing you could do is you could do this deal after free agency starts and sign somebody like Danilo Gallinari first and then do this deal. And then you got a pretty darn good team. Like then you got a team worth talking about at least. But you'd sort of have to know you had Gallinari in the bag at $17.9 million because you're not going to be able to generate more room than that. And then you make this deal after that. That would make the Suns interesting for sure. It might be a short peak, but they'd be fun.
That is a more interesting deal. But again, it seems like the short peak, that is that still enough to really be competing with the Lakers, the Warriors, or does that move them up into something like now they're a 5th seed, a 4th seed in the playoffs,
yeah,
and maybe
think,
they make the second round of the playoffs.
Phoenix's mentality is more, please just let us be respectable for once, yeah. Right? So like getting the 4 seed, 5 seed, maybe winning 50 games, like I think they would definitely, you know, if they could have that for a couple of years, I think they'd probably take that.
On the flip side, giving up Rubio, Kelly Oubre Jr., though he is a Kansas player, so you have to add some value there, and the 10th pick in a draft that we generally don't think is that strong of a draft, to have a couple of years, you know, as a 4th or 5th seed, which certainly is great development for Devin Booker. It's great development for DeAndre Ayton. Maybe that is worth it. Because it's not like you're passing on a franchise star to make a deal like that.
It's It's worth batting around, certainly. If I knew I had a shot at Gallinari, I would think hard about this if I was Phoenix.
That's interesting. Your value on Gallinari, though, runs a little bit higher than $17.9 million, if I remember correctly from your Athletic article.
Yeah, it does, but he's going to have a lot of trouble getting that number. I mean, there's not a lot of cap space out there. Most of it is on rebuilding teams. So I think if Phoenix gave him a couple years at this number, like 18, with 5% raises at his age, with his health history, I think if you're him, you have to take that.
All right. There's our draft trades for the top 10 picks in 2020 NBA draft. We will be back in a couple of days again with John Hollinger redrafting the 2019 NBA draft. You've been listening to Chad Ford's NBA Big Board on the Locked On Podcast Network. Aloha.